It is straight up at 8 o'clock. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of the Mornings with Ed show. This coming Thursday night, the World Affairs Council of Orange County will be hosting an event. They are at worldaffairscouncil.org, and speaking at that event will be Dr. Kyle Longley. Dr. Longley is a professor of history at Chapman University, the director of the War and Society Program. He joined the faculty in July of 2020 after serving at Arizona State University all the way back since 1995. He's published 9 books. A historian, if we've ever had one on the program, we are delighted to speak with him this morning. In for the conversation, Dr. Kyle Longley. Thank you for being here, Dr. Longley.
I'm very happy to be here.
Good to have you today. So on Thursday night, what is your subject matter? What are you intending to address on Thursday?
Well, what I want to look at is, you know, the ongoing trends in Latin America right now. Unfortunately, right now, most Americans seem to be transfixed on other areas of the world. But to me, Latin America is always sort of the canary in the coal mine in terms of how the United States is going to be affected by its closest neighbors. And again, major trading partners, culturally very intertwined. And so we haven't been paying attention as much, but there's a lot going on down there right now, especially in places like Nicaragua, Venezuela, Brazil. I think that's the one we need to be watching very closely right now. But throughout the region, as the economic sort of downturns are starting to hit there, and I always love the quote of Porfirio Diaz, the famous Mexican dictator in the 19th century. He always said, if the United States sneezes, Mexico gets a cold. And I think that's what we need to be watching right now. But we're not. And that's traditionally the case. We only watch when crisis sets in. But there's some boiling crisis ready to sort of spill over.
And yes, we have taken our eye off, historically, we've taken our eye off of the Latin American and South American ball. How do we get Americans more concerned about the economies in these South American countries and how they tie directly into our economy?
Well, I think here in Southern California, I don't think it's as hard to sell. I think we pay attention to Latin America probably much more so than most of the regions of the world outside of, you know, the border states like Texas and then places like Florida, which are intimately tied into the Caribbean basin. But I think the main thing is just try to be a little bit more proactive, pay attention. And it's not just about the economies, it's about their political cultures and how these are reflecting ongoing trends on a global scale. For example, Venezuela being a prime example of, you know, having a strong say in the global economy because of their oil and strongly being influenced by people like Vladimir Putin. Right. Who right now is preoccupied with his own challenges, which has been good for the United States. But if you also watch what China is doing in Latin America as far as extracting minerals and resources, that's something we should be paying very close attention to if you look on a larger geopolitical scale.
Now, well, you mentioned Venezuela. Now, with Maduro and Venezuela, have we given up on a mutually beneficial relationship with them? And is our interest in them really all about oil?
Well, I think it's always been about oil with Venezuela. I mean, most Americans don't realize, you know, the headquarters for the longest time of the Venezuelan National Oil Company was Houston. And, you know, Citgo and all these different things that were completely interrelated. I don't think we've given up. I think we've just had some many other things. I mean, the Biden administration started with Afghanistan, and we know that was a very difficult situation. What's going on in the Ukraine, which to me is one of the most important struggles in the world today in terms of this challenge of between authoritarianism and democracy, is very much at the forefront. So we have not really been paying that much attention, but, you know, there's been small incremental steps, and it doesn't just have to be the national government, the U.S. companies. There's all kinds of things going on, but Venezuela has a disproportionate amount of power given their oil resources and given that we're paying, still over $5.50 a gallon for gasoline. So I think Venezuela is one to watch. Nicaragua is one to watch. What Daniel Ortega and the Sandinistas have been doing as far as reinforcing this family dictatorship there That's one that's been off our radar map, but should be on our radar map as far as this movement toward authoritarianism. And again, that's where you factor in China and Russia into the larger geopolitical struggles. And of course, to me, the one that is most important with the elections on the horizon is Brazil, with Bolsonaro saying basically he's already setting up his own big lie in terms of trying to hold on to power. And we need to be watching that one very carefully through November, and hopefully they will go through a peaceful transition. But right now, that's not guaranteed.
The Bolsonaro administration in Brazil, do you find them shockingly like our former administration here?
Well, he called himself Little Trump. So I think, if anything, he's trying to mimic him. You know, there, of course, there are significant differences between American and Brazilian political cultures, but the Brazilian one is probably much more fragile. If you look at the long history of Brazil and their relationship to military dictatorships, you just got to go back, look at 1964, for example, when the tanks are out rolling through the streets and putting in a military dictatorship that's going to be in place for almost 20 years. So I think that's one that may be the most precarious of all. Venezuela's already fallen. Nicaragua has already fallen. Brazil may be the next, but it will lean right as opposed to the first two that tend to lean more to the left.
Right. And speaking of left, so several countries, Colombia, Bolivia, Chile, Peru, have all leaned a little left in their last elections. In Colombia, Gustavo Petro is the first left-wing candidate to be elected president of Colombia, and his vice president, Francia Marquez, is the first Afro-Colombian and the second female vice president. And those stories seem similar in Chile, Bolivia, and Peru. As these nations advance socially, will they economically also be able to advance in the same direction, moving to the left?
I when we say measured in the left, I mean we're just talking a little left of center. Maduro, far left of center. You know, Bolsonaro would take it far right of center. So I think these countries are sort of teetering on that. You know, we only look at it between a capitalist and, you know, socialist, but you watch a lot of these countries, they're not being influenced by the United States to the degree that they were at one point. They're being much more influenced by the Western style, Western European style of democracy and socialism. And I think that's where you're seeing more of that. I don't think it's going to make a hard left turn toward the FARC, for example, in Colombia. You know, what they envisioned as far as a Marxist utopia. And same goes Sendero Luminoso in Peru and places like that. I think you're seeing a move, you know, more toward this trying to sort of mediate some of the difficulties that have been created by the capitalist system in many of their societies, and then addressing things like the drugs, which are still fundamentally tied to a geopolitical issue because of demand issues for Peru and Colombia and Ecuador that are all shaped by their own drug cultures.
Right. And you mentioned drugs, and I want to go back to Colombia for a second, because Gustavo Petro won the presidency. But one of the other candidates was a guy by the name of Frederico Gutierrez, who was the former mayor of Medellin. Is it safe to assume that the mayor of Medellin is always in the pocket of the drug cartel?
I don't think he can always. I mean, I'm a historian. We rarely use the term always, never.
Right.
You know, we try to temper our language, but there definitely is going to be some kind of influence there. He's definitely going to be familiar, but in some ways, what we've seen in the last since really, you know, the turn of the Plan Colombia and Uribe and others, you've seen sort of a turn and a flip towards, you know, a lot of times these people, they're getting into power by running against the drug cartels and using those as their leverage points. And, you know, the one that right now you're watching very closely is El Salvador. That's another one I'm going to be talking about. What I'm going to be talking about on Thursday is how the drug culture there, and they're basically trying to create basically treaties and truces with the drug lords to try to reduce the violence. And I think some of that has been going on in Colombia for the last 20 years. And if you really want to understand the drug wars, Colombia is, of course, always sort of a central point. But how their governments have tried to negotiate that process after so many years of basically the drug lords having a very disproportionate amount of power. So I think, you know, the problem is, and just like I'll run into on Thursday night, I need about 15 weeks of the semester even to try to dip my toe into a lot of these different issues. But I get 25 minutes. You know, but I think what I would encourage people to do, just like I encourage my students even after 15 weeks, is continue to dive deep. There's a lot of good resources to try to learn from. And the press, including the European press, pay a lot more attention to this than what sometimes the American press. But, you know, Los Angeles Times does a great job. The Miami Herald, there's a number of major media sources that I think do an exceptionally good job because they know where their focus is and where it should be. And so they're looking south, just like being raised in West Texas as I was, everything came from the south. We had much more in common with people in northern Mexico in many ways than we did someone in Maine, being raised in West Texas. So I think a lot of it has to do. So there are sources out there, there's histories to read, and I hope people will just educate themselves about these important topics and these important issues.
Well, I don't know if I mentioned it to you when we were off air, but I swear I wished our conversation today was 3-4 hours long. I could go all day with this. I do want to jump real quick, and it involves our policy currently with South America, but it's to another one of your magnificent books that you wrote called Deconstructing Reagan, Conservative Mythology and America's 40th President. How mismanaged was the war on drugs, and what effect did the war on drugs that President Reagan put forth, what effect does that have on our relationship with some of those countries now?
Oh, it has everything. And in fact, right now, I'm directing a thesis for one of our students in my War Diplomacy and Society program at Chapman. And he's a State Department FSO. And he's writing about how the Nixon administration started the whole process through Operation Intercept back in the late 1960s, and how they started the transformation that then Reagan took and built upon. And, you know, it's just been a fundamental part. And a lot of it was designed for the domestic consumption to try to say, well, this isn't our problem. This is a supply problem. No, and what Mexicans and many others in Latin America will remind you of, it's a demand problem. If the United States doesn't have such an insatiable demand for the drugs, then the drug problem doesn't exist. But, you know, and we could talk at length about, you know, you take it back to Border Patrol to a large degree was created to do two things. One, stop the Chinese immigration coming up through Mexico, and two, to stop the alcohol production coming up through Mexico. So we have a long, long history. But Reagan's war on drugs definitely exacerbated that. We look at our jail population, the changes that occurred there. Look at crack cocaine and how it was tied to the Contra War in Nicaragua. And you'll see a lot of those origins, but given here, two presidential libraries here in Southern California, one in Yorba Linda and one up in Simi Valley, and both of those have significant amounts of holdings explaining how these things kind of evolved. And they're definitely rooted very much in Nixon and Reagan.
Right. And in many Americans' attempt to stop legal and illegal migration into this country, the intent of supporting emerging South American economies, let's say Ecuador, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, these countries, is to de-incentivize the poor of those countries from making that often treacherous journey here. And I think my question is, with the political corruption and mismanagement in those nations, is that just a waste of American dollars?
I won't say a waste, because we have seen successes. A lot of times they're being run by NGOs and others that, you know, are uplifting, for example, women entrepreneurs. Same with substitution of crops, although it's very difficult to substitute a crop of growing flowers rather than growing poppies in terms of the amount of money that you can make off these things. So I won't say that they're a complete waste. A lot of times, unfortunately, and again, I'm going back to El Salvador, that's one. You take El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, and you have three major sources of immigration to the United States, and a lot of it is created by the violence related to the drug lords. I mean, we could talk about the MS-13s in El Salvador, for example, being created basically here in L.A. area, and then being transferred back to El Salvador, where it has destabilized the country to a significant degree, leading to the immigration issues that we're seeing continue today, where it's ended being, to a large degree, Mexican population and more Central American, which has created its own complexity. So, again, we could go into dissertations and books and talk about that at great length, but it is definitely interrelated, and there's been more failures than successes, but I think there have been some successes when you look at like judicial reform in a number of these countries like Colombia and El Salvador. There has been some progress.
Okay, and I you were the director of the LBJ Presidential Library for a couple of years, just a couple of years ago. A question about LBJ's administration and their involvement with South America. It seemed that they were focused on South America, and then the Nixon administration happened. Am I wrong there?
I think you're I would say it's a little more complex. I would say the Kennedy administration for sure was focused on Latin America with the Alliance for Progress, Kennedy's trips down there. He saw a lot of different things going on. Johnson lost sight of it, and I would argue mainly because Vietnam, which is of his own creation, also played a role in sort of diverting attention. Also, the rise of the military dictatorships, which we were talking about your own relationship with Argentina, but you look at Brazil, you look at Peru in 64, you look at Chile in 73. I mean, it just all is a continuation there. But I would argue Johnson lost eyes on the prize because of Vietnam. You know, that Vietnam just destroyed most of his policies, the war on poverty, a lot of things. And so, and then you carry that into Nixon. And again, Nixon is where I think you see the drugs, and you see the coup in Chile in 73, and basically open season on the democracies. And I'm going to talk about this on Thursday night in terms of these long-term trends, and they're repetitive in many ways.
Can't wait for that conversation. It is this coming Thursday night, the 21st, at the World Affairs Council of Orange County. Go to worldaffairscouncil.org for more information. Dr. Kyle Longley, professor of history at Chapman University, please don't make this the only time that you and I speak.
I would love to talk whenever you would like to. We could probably talk about a lot of different things. And, you know, the great thing is we're studying these kind of issues at Chapman University and featured and supported by our administration to try to play a substantial role in addressing these issues on a larger scale through our education process.
Thank you very much. Dr. Kyle Longley, 8:17 the time. It's the Mornings with Ed Show. Good luck on Thursday night, doctor.
Thank you, sir.
All right.